Hey there, team. Before we get started, just got a few housekeeping notes. The Leaders Huddle podcast team is currently putting together the production schedule for the start of the new year. We are really interested in developing listener-requested content. We want to know what topics are relevant out in the force today in your unit, and what topics you want to learn about in order to be a more effective leader. So go ahead and leave a suggestion for a future episode in the form of an iTunes review. While you are there, leave us a rating. They help draw attention to the podcast and attract new listeners. This podcast and all the resources Cattle provides are products of the Army, done on Army time with the intent of advancing the profession. iTunes reviews and word of mouth references are the best way to share this resource with other leaders out in the force. We certainly thank you for the continued support and feedback. Today in the huddle, we have the privilege of interviewing Colonel Steve McCanich about his article focused on utilizing the Army's multi-source assessment feedback as a catalyst for leader development. Through his article, which was featured in the September-October edition of the Military Review, Colonel McCanich presents the argument that leader development is our competitive advantage as a profession, as well as a litany of other valuable concepts on the topics of leader development and growth through feedback. Guest host Kyle Stillwell and I were fired up during this interview, and we're really excited to bring our listeners episode 16 of the Leaders Huddle podcast, Leader Development as a Competitive Advantage. Welcome to the Leaders Huddle podcast. Through this podcast, our goal is to educate and inspire the current generation of company-grade officers through advancing the discussion of leadership, professionalism, and building high-performing organizations. I am Captain David Wirt, your host for today's episode. With me today, co-hosting this episode, is Captain Kyle Stillwell. Our guest for today's show is Colonel Kevin A. McCanich. He currently serves as the commander for Army Support Activity in Honduras. He holds a Bachelor of Science for the United States Military Academy at West Point, a Master of Arts for Central Michigan University, and a Master's degree from SAMS, the School of Advanced Military Studies, at the U.S. Army Command General Staff College, Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. Additionally, he has a Master of Science in National Security Studies from the U.S. Army War College. His command assignments include the 519th Military Intelligence Battalion during Operation Enduring Freedom. Sir, welcome into Leaders Huddle podcast.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate you having me, and more importantly, I appreciate you guys doing this to share lessons learned and information around our great Army. Doing things like this is what being a professional is all about, and enabling a learning organization.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, sir. The MSAF program was developed to enhance leader development for Army and civilian leaders serving in today's complex operational environment. The MSAF program is run by the Center for Army Leadership, who's responsible for leader development, leadership research, leadership doctrine, and leadership common core development across the Army. While soldiers are required to document their completion as a part of the evaluation process, I think that most Army leaders would agree that there's room for improvement in how they're utilized at the line level. Today, we'll take a candid look at the MSAF 360 and discuss how you can optimize leader development for yourself and others. Sir, so what role does multi-source or 360-degree feedback play in leader development?
That's a good question, because when you look at the role of a 360, and in the Army's case, the MSAF, you have to go all the way back to what's the purpose of doing it. And the real issue gets to improving employee performance and potentially behavior, depending on what is what may be observed and reported. That feedback piece that you get from people who work around you and work with you is critical. Many leader development institutions and organizations around our great nation will tell you, you know, they use the term that feedback is a gift. And that's the approach you, as a leader who want to develop and get better, have to take with the results from the MSAF 360. Unfortunately, I think there's some dynamics you have to work through when any organization wants to institute one. It cannot at all be linked to somebody's evaluation. There may be some legal issues or concerns there as well, but you may not get as candid feedback if there is that dynamic involved. It has to be about leader development and performance improvement. Also, you have to consider that the research tells you, and I highlight it in the article, that performance improvement is unfortunately unlikely, and most of the studies indicate that. Partly because, you know, there's a lot of dynamics. People are don't want to accept the feedback. They are too proud sometimes to change their behavior. Or what I worry about especially is a lack of accountability in the process. If you receive feedback and it's just left to your own interpretation and own personal desire to improve and or change your behavior, not everybody has the same intrinsic motivation to do that. So while 360s and the MSAF are wonderful tools, and you mentioned the Center for Army Leadership, there are great professionals out there who are trying to do the, you know, doing the right thing on behalf of the Army. When the feedback is, you know, there's no accountability in it, you're going to have trouble actually achieving the changes in behavior and leader development growth that the 360 tool is intended to help with.
Absolutely. So as you see it, what's the current state of the MSAF 360?
Well, me personally, as a professional in the Army, I'm a bit concerned in the implementation phase. And what I mean by that, I'll back up a second. If you look at the questions in detail and the things that are being assessed and the process, you know, with a web-based interface tool that's pretty easy to use, I think we're about right there. The questions are very similar to things that came from the Center for Creative Leadership, which is an internationally recognized company, in terms of what measures of things that they're being assessed. So I think there we're okay. But in the implementation phase, I think we're falling short. All the trends over the last 3 to 5 years from the CASL surveys, which are the annual survey that the Center for Army Leadership does across the Army, they're all down. You know, some of the data points, you know, 2/3 of officers report only applying minimal effort towards their MSAF results. 70% of assessed officers did not create an individual leader development plan after receiving their MSAF results. Coaching is available. A virtual coaching tool is available, but 10% or under of those who complete the MSAF actually utilize it. And alarmingly, the trends are up in a negative way, that most officers are only initiating the MSAF to meet the OER requirement check, which kind of tells you that while we have this tool, it has been developed in accordance with, you know, kind of international industry standards. When we get to implementation and actually utilizing the feedback for leader development, we're missing the mark.
Sir Dave here. Back in our episode focused on mentoring relationships, we also highlighted the research coming off of the CASL report. And without going into too many details, I would like to get your thoughts on what are some of the contributing variables or factors to why leaders consistently rate low in developing others, and then potentially offer some remedies or how we can incorporate the MSAF to get after developing others?
Yeah, that's a really super question. Let me preface my answer with a thought as well. You know, the stuff, the results and the indicators that came from the CASL surveys are but one data point. And so I think we have to be careful not to draw definitive conclusions across the Army that developing others is not happening. Now, the CASL is our primary tool. It gets read by senior Army leadership. It obviously has a lot of, you know, importance, but it is one tool. As I've thought about developing others, you know, I think back to relationships that I've had all the way from the time I was a second lieutenant at Fort Drum up until now, and I will share with you, in every element there was a sense of being developed. I've had numerous mentors and other things, and so we just have to keep that in context. Now, that said, if the only indicator that the Army is reporting back to senior leaders in the CASL that we're failing at is developing others, we do have to take a hard look at it. And so if we're gonna ask ourselves, how could we do that better as Army leaders? I think we have to be very, you know, succinct in how we get there. And for me, I thought about this a lot with the young people that I still mentor today, and I say, well, how could I, you know, categorize it? First, I think you have to want to do it. A mentor has to want to put the effort in to help somebody else. And for lack of better words, you have to want to care. We had a saying when I was a lieutenant, you know, when you go down to the motor pool and it's minus 25 degrees at Fort Drum, you have to want to care to do the right thing, because it's very easy to just go inside, you know, where it's more comfortable. You have to care to do the right thing. And it's the same thing with your relationships with young officers or even NCOs that you may mentor. Once you care, then you need to listen. A very smart general officer I worked for one time said, you know, Kev, you know, the Lord gave you, you know, you got two ears and one mouth for a reason, buddy. Talk less and listen more. And so part of that mentoring relationship, you know, you need to really, really listen to what somebody's saying and hear them. Because they may, you know, how they communicate may be different than how you hear. Then you have to seek to understand where they're coming from, and you have to understand before then you can be understood. So that comes from really listening and taking some time to break down the things that they're saying to you. The second thing you have to do, in my opinion, is you really have to want to establish a relationship with another human being. That relationship that you have one-on-one with somebody else is the most important part, and it goes back to a lot of the tenets of our Army. It's about trust. You need the people that you that are the mentees to tell you things about what they're feeling, what they're experiencing, what they're going through. You want them to reach out to you. If you're the mentor and you are the one always initiating the contact, something's not right there. You want the mentee to feel free and open, no pressure, and also no repercussions to reaching out and contacting you. That may seem intuitive, but imagine, say, I mean, I'll share with you an example of my own life now. Imagine being a junior cadet at the United States Military Academy. Is it easy to reach out to an 06 colonel in the United States Army and have a relationship with them? Or some of the second lieutenants that I know who are class of, you know, 14, 15, and 16, they may feel, you know, I'm not going to reach out and talk to this colonel. They have to be able to, you know, have the feeling that they can do that and speak freely and have a lot of trust. So when we talk about mission command and building teams based on trust, teamwork, and cohesion, the same thing has to happen in that mentor-to-mentee relationship. And then the third thing I would offer, and this is really dependent upon the mentor, you have to be able to change with them and go to their perspective. So, for example, there's a cadet in the class of 18 that I have a very active relationship with mentoring. And when I don't talk about things from the perspective of a colonel in the United States Army who's 26 years older than that individual, I try to go to their perspective. If I was a junior at the United States Military Academy and I knew what decisions were coming up in my life, how might I approach them based on my experience? If you talk at your level, it's not going to be very helpful, and then you'll miss some of the generational gap, and your experience that you're trying to help them with will get lost. So you really have to go to, you know, their level. People have talked about in the past, you know, try to look at life through somebody else's, you know, lens. Sit in somebody else's seat, wear somebody else's shoes, those kind of, you know, cliches. And that you really have to take the time to prepare for that and put yourself in their position when you have that discussion. And then it can be very, very, very helpful for everybody. And I would share with you that, you know, when we think about developing others, when I think about it in my own career, in my own professional life, I use the term that it's highly addicting. And I mean that because, like, when I get done with a conversation with people that I interact with and my mentees, I'm on cloud nine. Not because it's done a lot for me, because I feel like I'm contributing, but the feedback I get from them is very positive. And I leave those events, like, I've had them at 9, 10 o'clock at night before and been so excited I can't go to sleep, because I just, you know, you feel like you made that connection with another human being that's really, really going to help them. And I would offer to folks that they need to do that. And the other thing is, you know, there's a lot of dynamic in society about, you know, what generation are folks? Are they, you know, Generation X, Millennials, Generation Y, whatever, you know, all these descriptors. What you really have to do, too, is also be very attuned to what is the best way to communicate. You know, my generation grew up on email. I have had sometimes troubles with other generations doing email, but man, they will Facebook message, or they will text, or they will, you know, Instagram or Snapchat or whatever, a lot easier than they'll do some of the other stuff. So some of my best mentoring relationships today are when I can think what's going on in my mentee's life and send that individual a note through Facebook Messenger, knowing that that's how they're more likely to communicate back, and they're very appreciative of it because it's quick, it's easy, and it, you know, and it's actually thoughtful. And so we have to go to what all the communication tools are available also to reach those folks. Sometimes it's not all, you know, phone calls or face-to-face, which myself and maybe some older generations may be more comfortable with. So we as leaders have to be able to, you know, to accommodate in all areas. And sometimes it takes a mental shift. I mean, when I got to West Point as an RTO in 2013, I'd just come out of Afghanistan. I asked my cadet regimental commander, I'm like, well, how do I call you? Do you have a phone in your room? You know, a normal phone that I can dial, you know, seven numbers and you pick it up. And he looked at me and goes, sir, just call me or text me on my iPhone. And for me, that was like a generational snap that is like, okay, this is different. And I became very comfortable with sometimes having to text cadets back and forth because that's how they were communicating. And they were, of course, they're all professional text, you know, to communicate where we needed to be and what we needed to do. But that was a way that you could reach them and get things done and actually help them. So I know that's a pretty long answer, but that's a really good question about how mentoring relationships can really tie into developing others and helping our Army.
Yes, sir. Before I ask a follow-on question, I'll just take a little caveat that in Episode 9, we took a real deep dive into mentoring, and specifically the concept of e-mentoring with Colonel Kimball, who did his dissertation research on Army mentoring. And I really liked the phrase you had there of seeking to understand before being understood. I use that with a cadet who is a battalion commander right now, and his face just lit up. And I said, hey, man, I can't take credit for that. I saw that on a TED Talk that General McChrystal gave, but it just made a lot of sense. Made a lot of sense to him. And so, sir, with my follow-on question on the topic of leader development, you cited in your article, I didn't get the reference, but the exact quote, and I'll read it here, is leadership development is one of the most pressing issues facing organizations globally today and represents a great chance for them to seize competitive advantage in their industries. The future success of organizations lies in the bench strength of its leaders and the developmental opportunities that are afforded to them. I wanted to ask if you remember where that reference came from, where that quote, and specifically in the Army context, what is the competitive advantage that we need to foster for the junior leaders that we're trying to mentor, coach, and teach into future leadership positions?
Yeah, that's a super question, and thanks for bringing up that quote. If I recall properly, it came from a Center for Creative Leadership white paper on the leadership gap. And the idea of a leadership gap is that companies or organizations may not be investing enough in their people. So what the company needs in terms of human capital leadership skills and what it has in its bench strength, that gap is widening. And as such, the companies and businesses have to avoid that. So they need to invest in leader development. And I think that translates directly into the second part of your question about, you know, the relation to the United States Army. The Army is all about people. After doing this for 22 plus years all over the world and multiple, you know, commands and elements from the operational army to the institutional army, the things I remember are the people that I worked with and the relationships that I've had with them. And, you know, a lot of them are out of the service today because they chose to, and I still have relationships with them. A lot of them are in, and I still have relationships with them. And that contact with people is really what we're all about. So if you look at the, you know, the winning in a complex environment, okay, we must continue to develop leaders to operate that way at every level of our leadership development system, from initial entry training, and officer training, say, in commissioning sources like West Point and ROTC, all the way up to we to what we teach at the Army War College and the other war colleges at that level when we send folks to do stuff, because the world will continue to adapt and adapt, you know, pretty rapidly. So we have to be, I think, as an institution, incredibly flexible in the instruction methods, the instruction delivery. We have to be incredibly creative. Yes, we have, you know, an old Army parlance, we have task conditions and standards. Well, the conditions may be rapidly changing for folks. How can we adapt to meet those conditions so we're continuing to grow leaders that we need for the Army? Our education system around the world is valued on how we grow folks. Our leader development opportunities, they may not always be obvious to people when you're in them, why you're being put in one position or another in terms of leadership development. But having done this for a while now, you look back on the things that you've done and you realize that you have been put in the right positions to grow from one skill to another. And my point in the article is, okay, so we have a requirement to do a 360. They're a proven, valuable tool as long as feedback can be done. But the Army's telling us, the people in the Army are telling us, we're not really doing this right and it's not being implemented. So how could we make that better as a leader development tool so we don't have a leadership gap? So it can be value added to helping us win in a complex world that is facing our Army. And that's what I think we really have to think about. But it all gets back to people and relationships with people.
Yes, sir. So if it's that important to winning in a complex environment, you know, and given the importance of feedback to mentoring and leader development, what are some options going forward to make the MSAF 360 tool more effective?
Yeah, I think you got to start with, what do you want to do, or what can you do? So, you know, I think there are four things that the Army could do with the entire MSAF program. First, you could leave it as it is, make no changes to it. In simplistic terms, I think that would be kind of being accepting of a current situation that's not as good as it should be, and I wouldn't recommend that. Second thing you could do is eliminate the program altogether. To me, that doesn't make a lot of sense either, because we have a low-cost, easy-to-use graphic interface tool on a website, and some folks in the Army are getting value added out of it and putting some effort into it. So I wouldn't want to inhibit that leader development, even though it's not as large of a population as we'd want. Third thing you could do is make it voluntary. Remove the OER requirement and some of the stigma that comes from that administrative requirement. Make it voluntary and let those folks who care about feedback actually receive feedback and implement it. I'll share with you, as a student at the Army War College, there's a similar, at a different level, but a similar type 360 environment and assessment you can do. It's voluntary. Not everybody has to do it. You get some good feedback from it, but then again, you're at a point where, you know, how is the individual who receives it held accountable for the feedback and the changes? And then the fourth thing you could do is improve the system. And that's what I would argue for. And then from that point, now there's some specific things we could look at doing. I mentioned to you the lack of accountability in the feedback. Well, a mechanism to enforce follow-up from your feedback would be incredibly helpful. Now it's sort of left to the individual. I've already mentioned that not a lot of people request the coaching. That's voluntary, the coaching. But have some mechanism to enforce follow-up where maybe, you know, the people who receive their feedback have to have a discussion with somebody. I propose the idea that, you know, maybe officers seek feedback personnel outside the chain of command, so there's no implications to the OER. So as a battalion commander at Fort Bragg, when I was, if I had received feedback, could I go to another brigade commander, share my feedback with them, and get coaching and mentoring without any sort of, you know, negative impact on, one, my relationship with my current boss, or two, as it relates to what I'm doing? And can we as an Army, you know, informally institute something like that, where the check is that, hey, this is who I went to talk to my feedback with, and maybe it's just a conversation with your senior rater or something you put on your, you know, officer support form. The second thing is the development of an individual leader development plan. This is not foreign to the United States Army. Most of my employees right now in Honduras are Army civilians. You know, our great Army civilians are part of our formation and serve side by side with us all over the world. My civilian employees are required to have individual leader development plans. How do they want to improve their performance and their skills and their current job set so they can continue to grow and develop? And we want that. We want our civilian workforce, who is the continuity in many respects of many complex systems in our Army, to have that. So why don't we require it of our officers as well? I think it would be a one simple fix. Third thing, I don't recall in my 22 plus years of service to this point where the Army has trained me in any of my professional military education to provide feedback and provide coaching and mentorship and to give me some tools and skills to develop others. Yes, I've had job experiences. Yes, I've had to counsel others. Yes, I've had negative experiences that you learn from and you get better. But formal instruction in how to be a coach or a mentor or give that feedback has not occurred. In my case, I was blessed to go to the Center for Creative Leadership as the 18th Airborne Corps representative in a ForceCom program back in 2009. So when you sit there for an entire week and you learn how they do it in the outside world, you get a lot of skills and tools. But because of, you know, constraints on time and stuff, it was a very small population who got that opportunity. I think that's something we need to help our leaders develop in while we have them in school. Imagine an NCO, you know, in the senior leader course being taught those type of things, and not just how to fill out a 4856 and put the magic bullet statement in there that, you know, this action could result in X, Y, or Z. No, real honest feedback for development. We might want to look at how we do that in the Army. And then the fourth thing that I'll offer, and this is a little more challenging, is this idea of vertical development. And if you look at the current MSAF, second lieutenants and colonels fill out the same one, meaning the questions are the same. What if we change the MSAF system in the Army to where you are being assessed against the requirements for your next job? So, for example, I'm talking to, you know, three Army captains at the United States Military Academy who are, you know, training and building leaders for our nation there. Well, your next job when you go back to the operating force will be a battalion S3 or battalion XO for likely for whatever, you know, branch unit that you are. Well, why don't we make your MSAF right now an assessment against those skills and those things that are required? Because if I did that, then I might be able to identify gaps in your development from where you are now to where I need you to be, or excuse me, where the Army needs you to be 2 or 3 years from now. And then you're getting feedback in a developmental manner of what you need to maybe learn or do. And so if you take that at every level, imagine the company XO getting feedback about what skills they need to be a company commander. That would be phenomenal. There's no job in the Army that better prepares you to be a company commander than being an XO. And you're more ready to be a company commander when you come out of being an XO than any other job. But then we normally move you to, you know, 2 or 3 other assignments, and you know, go to the Captain's Career Course and you PCS, and then you go someplace, and then you're a company commander. Well, you'd probably want that feedback when you're coming out of that key job as a lieutenant. And I could walk that analogy up at every single level to include, You know, if you look at a colonel in command in the Army right now, are they prepared for strategic level leadership or strategic organizational management type things that help the Army run? And those relationships and persuasion and influence and things that are strategic leadership skills that we don't generally expect out of direct leaders, where you can, you know, be more involved with people and be more directive. There's leadership things that you need at every level. So why not build the tools in a vertical development strata that allow people to develop and make the tool more value added? I think that might be, you know, a very tangible thing for the Army to look at that could make it better.
Okay, sir. So to touch back on your fourth recommendation of how to make the MSAF better, you write restructuring tools to support vertical development. And I would argue that the Army is really good at horizontal development and teaching new knowledge, skills, and information. We send our officers and NCOs to schools, and they get tabs and badges and ASIs and validates them for certain jobs. Vertical development, alternatively, is based on different levels or stages of thinking. And in your article, you have another reference that vertical development involves gaining new perspectives and leadership mindsets. So vertical development is transitioning and adding the capacity to handle complexities at new levels of responsibility. And as Kyle and I were discussing, the vertical development happens, but we may not provide that feedback mechanism to ingrain those lessons learned and to potentially catapult them forward and teach others on those new lessons and capabilities that you've learned.
Yeah. I think that's a really good follow-up question. And, you know, so part of my thought is, okay, so the premise behind it is that we're making an argument that it doesn't occur today. And part of my argument is it doesn't occur in the MSAF 360 tool. And that, to me, that makes a lot of sense, because I don't see it. So then we got to ask ourselves, does it occur anywhere else in the Army in a different form? And are we getting at it, but maybe tangentially and not in a holistic vertical development kind of mentality? And I think there's partial answers there. Our professional military education, it does evolve and grow over time. Last year at the War College, we had an entire block of instruction on strategic leadership and the skills and attributes that are needed at that level. That block of instruction would not be pertinent to a captain at the Captain's Career Course, or a second lieutenant, or even a major at CGSC, where you're obviously working up the chain from direct to organizational level leader. The War College prepares you to be a strategic leader. So PME does touch on it, to be fair. One of the tenets of the Army leadership methodology and model is that there has to be self-development. Individuals and professionals have to take the onus upon themselves to develop themselves. If, as a colonel, I was still reading platoon leader type books like I read as a cadet at West Point, I'd be missing the mark in terms of my own growth and development. The challenge we have there is you don't know the level of commitment and the level of desire of the individual to do that self-development and do it to a level that allows them to grow. But that does exist in the Army, that we've said that you must self-develop. New leadership mindsets, as you mentioned from the quote from the article, are incredibly helpful. How does that happen today? PME is there, self-development is there, but we have to also go back and say, okay, are there mentor-mentee relationships that allow the development to occur over time? So somebody can seek out a mentor and learn something along the way. I would say yes and no, but it's a matter of how formal would the Army want to make something like that. You know, any organization is probably going to want those who are more committed over those who are less committed, with the idea that maybe the more committed are seeking out the mentoring relationships where they learn and they grow and develop along along the path. If you don't have a mentor today, regardless of what kind of rank you're at, somebody could argue, well, you're really not putting forth all the effort. And maybe a formal mentorship process may be hard. That said, you're absolutely right. The skills and experiences and you know, badges that we earn as young officers, you know, give us some sort of, you know, credence in the profession while identifying, you know, skills that we bring to the table for the Army. They also give you a tremendous amount of confidence in yourself as a leader. And what we have to translate is, you know, the second lieutenant desire to jump out of an airplane or, you know, or become air assault qualified or graduate from Ranger or Sapper school, you know, and demonstrates, you know, some physical and mental and moral courage by the things that we put on our uniform. How does that translate to the colonel later in the United States Army? What, you know, badges and credentials and skills are they going out for at that level to, you know, maybe earn this, you know, the trust and confidence of others? You have to be able to make that leap. Now, the 360, I think, could change as a tool to better the Army to identify the things you want somebody to do to develop over time and how you want them to grow from the direct to the organizational to the strategic leader. Acknowledging that not everybody is going to make a general officer, and the argument is not create a system where everybody is going to become a general, because that's not our structure and that's not how we define success. But the, you know, the 99% of colonels who don't make general, they run key systems and programs and strategic efforts for the joint force and the Army. They have the same, they have similar skill sets and capabilities and experience that can leverage the force and make the force better writ large. That's where we've got to, you know, ensure that we're growing the right capabilities and skills after all the investment we've put in to grow an Army colonel. It takes a long time. And so that vertical development will help ensure that those key leaders are there and in place to do it. And also down the chain, how are we growing from captain to major? You know, I spent a lot of time with the tactical officers who worked for me at West Point, taking them from being captains where you're worried about the company and the direct level leadership to looking at it from my perspective as an organizational leader and why we might make decisions we do as organizational level leaders. That growth has to occur. And if we're not teaching it to everybody through experiences or mentoring relationships, can we also inculcate the skills and attributes that we want maybe through the MSAF program and vertical development? I think the answer is yes. And I think what it does for the Army is it gives us, you know, not to use an overused cliche, but just gives us one more, you know, arrow, you know, in the bag that we can use to grow our folks.
Yes, sir. So at the company grade level, arguably it's kind of out of it's a little unrealistic to think that they're going to be able to make large institutional changes in terms of multi-source feedback. But what steps can the leaders take in their organization at the company grade level to improve themselves and others?
Super question. I think the first thing you want to do, you have to be able to willing to make the change. And then it all, at that level, at the direct level, it really is all about people. So before you try to tell somebody that you're working with in the company grade level, you know, how much you know, I would offer to you, show them how much you care. Make that connection with the young specialist or private first class who's got challenges in their life, the young sergeant who wants to progress in the Army and maybe do something more challenging, your peers. Make the connections with your peers left and right so you learn, you know, the teamwork and the cohesion that we need as a collective formation to do that. You're going to get at that level around your people all the time where your influence is more direct. You're going to get feedback every day as long as you're open and attuned and listen to it. A lot of it will come from your non-commissioned officers who may say, that's not a really good idea and I don't like how you handled that. Okay, take that as feedback and learn how to improve from it. The MSAF may be value added at that level because people are very in tuned and they're always watching the leader. So as a young leader, if you're unsure or unconfident or hopefully not overconfident and into the realm of arrogance, you're going to get feedback on how you perform. That's value added. And, you know, we don't want people to make mistakes, but we acknowledge, I think, in the Army that at the second lieutenant and first lieutenant level, you may make some developmental leadership mistakes as you grow and you learn and develop. And the more feedback we get, the more, you know, instances of you know, back to us of what worked and what didn't work, the more we can learn from it. And then, you know, quite honestly, that's why PCS and sometimes is a good thing. If you make that mistake, and but it's not catastrophic, but you need a fresh start or a different environment or perspective. You know, Fort Drum may be different than Fort Bragg, may be different from Fort Bliss. A heavy unit may be different from a light unit. There's all sorts of different dynamics that may put you in a different situation that allows you to continue and grow. What you have to do is just want to learn and develop. And want the feedback and make yourself better every day. I mean, I learned a long time ago, you know, on any given day, you're either going to get better or you're going to get worse. And, you know, even at my older age in the Army, I simplify it with about PT. You know, did I PT today? If the answer is yes, I got better. If the answer is no, then I did something. I'm a little bit less, you know, of a leader or a soldier today, and I got to make up for it tomorrow. Now, there's, you know, the circumstances that weigh in on what you can or cannot do, but it's a mental approach. Did I get better or did I get worse today? And what you want to try to do is have that trend go up over time. And so it's the mental approach, I think, too, that a young leader takes to it that would be incredibly helpful.
Sir, I really like the comparison there between PT and leader development. Too often leaders, and we're all guilty of it, are pressed for time and are moving from meeting to meeting and briefing to briefing, and may miss out on some of those opportunities. So becoming aware and building in that culture to where you're asking yourself, did I take the opportunity to develop others the way I should have today and not? So, but once you've built that coaching skill set, how do you build a coaching culture that achieves a competitive advantage through leader development?
It's about relationships, and you've got to set the right context or tone when you have that one-on-one conversation with somebody that you're working with. And you have to be unemotional and not overreact and not jump into the conversation too soon. I'll share with you, I mean, just right now in my own professional life, I have a tremendous civilian employee that I'm working with. They're phenomenal. There's one aspect of their performance that we need to discuss. I'm very worried about how it's going to go over. So instead of rushing into that conversation, I'm taking my time. I'm thinking through it. I'm going to set it up. I'm going to make it a very positive conversation, not a, hey, come in here, you're all messed up, I've seen you do this conversation, because that puts people on the defensive and it breaks down trust. It breaks down cohesion, and it'll end up breaking down the teamwork that you need on your team. So you have to have that skill set that, you know, it sounds hard to say, but you got to be able to give people bad news with a smile on your face and have them realize that it's a positive experience. The best counseling I ever received from a division commander when I was in combat was just like that. I knew that, you know, I learned a lot in the hour that I was in there, but it was a positive experience, even though the context, you know, had some problems behind it. That's how we gain the competitive advantage, because when we lose that trust, teamwork, and cohesion, that ability for Army leaders to come together from all parts and all posts across the Army and come together to solve complex missions on behalf of our nation when we're asked to do it, we will be a little bit less ready than I think our senior leaders are demanding us to be. And so it's, you know, when I was battalion commander at Fort Bragg, I ended up working for a brigade commander at Fort Bliss when we went to NTC. I saw him one time for 1 hour in his office, you know, and then boom, we're at NTC together. And I had my formation, he had a huge formation, he was integrating us in. You got to go figure out how to work, you know, on that team. And it all becomes about, you know, what's on the right part of your uniform where it says U.S. Army, or sorry, the left part, where it says U.S. Army. and making that trust, teamwork, and cohesion work. That's our competitive advantage. Our competitive advantage is our people. Our competitive advantage is the time and effort we put into developing others that come behind us. And our competitive advantage is then translating that into the most complex problems, you know, in the world. One of the unique things about the Army, it's one of the only professions, you know, in the world where, you know, I'm actually supportive of the people who are coming behind me taking my job. And I have a responsibility and a duty to educate, train, and inspire and develop them. That's what we're here to do. In some civilian businesses, that doesn't exist. You don't want to be looking over your shoulder about, you know, the young upstart guy who's coming to kick you out of your job because you got to preserve your job. Well, in the Army, I'm not about preserving my job. I'm about giving back to the institution through a leader development, you know, relationships that you have with folks and building them so the Army is better when I leave it than when I entered it. That's what makes us unique. That's what makes us a profession. And with our people, that's what gives us the competitive advantages to do whatever we're required on, you know, to do on behalf of our nation.
Sir, on that note, that was an amazing answer. And I think that answer really wraps up a lot of the motivation behind doing something like a podcast, having these discussions on what is our competitive advantage. And Kyle and I and Micah really want to thank you for your time Skyping in from Honduras. That's awesome. We'll make sure to highlight the article in our show notes. And for our listeners, it's in the September-October edition of the Military Review titled "How the Army's Multi-Source Assessment and Feedback Program Could Become a Catalyst for Leader Development." And honestly, sir, we actually played with the title of catalyst for the title of the actual whole podcast on how to incorporate that into leader development. So again, thank you for your time.
Thank you guys. This has been really enjoyable.
And we'll certainly, Kyle, you got anything to say for Colonel McCandish before we go?
Just really appreciate all your time and effort that you put into this, sir, and being a steward of the profession and being candid, taking a candid look at how we develop leaders. It's a great system. There's a lot of time and effort that's gone into it, and it's all about how do we make our Army and our institution better.
Yeah, it's my pleasure, guys. And like I mentioned up front, thanks for being a part of a system that, you know, that puts a podcast in place. When I graduated in 1994, nobody knew what a podcast was. It didn't exist. And so as a learning organization that, you know, adapts new tools and new methods and new ways to communicate across the force, this is but one of many. And the fact that it's coming from the, you know, premier leader institute in the world, I couldn't be more proud of what you guys are doing, and just keep it up.
Thank you, sir.
Well, thanks, sir. So this wraps up today's Leaders Huddle podcast. In the next episode, we will interview a senior non-commissioned officer on the topic of what platoon sergeants expect from their platoon leaders. You can connect with us at iTunes, and we're also on the Google Play platform. We want to hear from you on the topics you would like us to discuss, so please leave us a comment on iTunes or through Cowdell's sponsor Facebook page, which is at Company Command, and our Twitter handle at @CMD. Until next time, remember that elevating your performance and unleashing your potential as a leader takes intentionality and the humility to learn from others. The views expressed in the Leaders Huddle podcast are the opinions of the hosts and guests. The discussion shared here does not represent the official position of the United States Military Academy or the U.S. Army.